Right, so every single episode, Darren has a challenge to link last time's episode to this time's episode in a certain amount of steps. Starts with 5, goes to 4, 3, 2, 1. So he now has 4 steps to get from last episode, which was...
The Outsiders.
To this episode, which is...
Staying Alive.
Ah, well, can it be done?
Let's find out. Step 1. Rob Lowe was in About Last Night with Demi Moore. Step 2. Demi Moore was in One Crazy Summer with Bobcat Goldthwait. Step 3. Bobcat Goldthwait was in Burglar with Anne DeSalvo. And step 4. Anne DeSalvo was in Perfect with John Travolta, who plays Tony in Staying Alive. And that's the 4-step challenge.
Interesting. I was wondering who you're going to land on.
Hmm.
Well, I suppose as well, you know.
Yeah, I suppose. Hello?
Daz?
Yeah?
Can you do that again?
What?
We didn't do The Outsiders last week.
What did we do last week?
Predator.
Oh, piss. Oh, shit. Okay, we'll have to re-record that next time then. And welcome to episode 98 of Darren and Matt's 80s Adventure.
Wow, yes. My name is Matt.
And my name is Darren.
And this week we're looking at... Staying Alive!
Staying Alive! Staying Alive! Staying Alive! Staying Alive! Staying Alive! Staying Alive! Staying Alive! Yep, from... Kiddo. From 1983.
I mean, we didn't rehearse that either.
No. Could you tell? Could you tell?
Yes, 1983.
Yeah, again. Second week in a row we're in 1983.
Yeah, I found out when I was looking for facts.
Yeah. But hey, fuck it. If it's got to be done, it's got to be done.
It's got to be done. Yeah, so how are you, buddy?
I'm all right. A bit pissed, actually, if I'm honest.
I'm feeling the fuzz already.
Yeah. That's good. 2 cans of Crony and a massive, massive bottle of Smirnoff Ice.
Mm-hmm.
Deep.
Which I can feel on my teeth right now.
My teeth are dissolving.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, no, apart from that, I'm all right.
Excellent.
Yeah. Yourself?
Yeah, I'm not bad, actually.
Good. I mean, hopefully things will be all right. But at the moment, we are bang in the middle of a weather warning for Storm Aisha, which is battering the shit out of us. So if you hear anything windy,
it isn't
either of us. Rude. Very, very, very rude. But yeah, no, I'm good. Yourself?
Yeah. Everything's great. Well,
everything is gravy.
Everything is wonderful. Well, nice. It feels like it. Yeah, because we are here talking about this classic film.
This film? Yes.
Yeah.
Have you had a good week?
Yeah, my week's been okay. Yeah. But just watched this several times. So how about yourself?
Yeah, not bad. Very quiet. It's that time of year.
It's that time of year. Yeah, very quiet.
Yeah, I watched this film. And, of course, Saturday Night Fever to ease me in. So Tuesday I did Saturday Night Fever, Thursday I did Staying Alive. Yes, very, very interesting.
I can't wait to hear your thoughts on both of those, actually.
I bet you can't.
What you call me?
Huh? Outrageous. Anyway, yes, so going back to 1983 again, any other facts for us?
I'll see what I can dredge up. So let's start as we do with the cinema charts. It was the 11th, I believe, 11th of July that it premiered. Yep. So uh-huh. I've gone for the 15th to see where we were with the charts. Over in the States, we had number 5. We had War Games.
Ah, great film.
Yeah, we enjoyed that.
Love it.
Actually, we've done a fair few. Well, number 4 was Trading Places.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I remember we enjoyed that too. Yeah.
Number 3, I'm guessing a re-release of Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs.
I think we talked about that on a previous podcast.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like not remastered because it didn't really happen then. But I remember that. Yeah.
Yeah, well, I think when I looked at it, it said like weeks on release. It had like thousands of weeks or something. So number 2, Return of the Jedi.
Don't know that one.
No. I can't wait to do that. And number 1.
Yeah.
Staying Alive.
Unbelievable.
Came in at number 1, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that was the US chart.
Sorry?
You said that was the US chart.
Yes, because we didn't get it till much later.
Yeah.
So, Over here at number 5 we had The Missionary. And it's okay. About
a missionary.
Yeah, he returns to England from his missionary work in Africa, and despite plans to marry his childhood sweetheart, receives a most unusual assignment: a minister to local prostitutes. It's also got Denham Elliott, who was in Trading Places.
Yeah, and Indiana Jones.
Yeah, I love him. Number 4, Educating Rita.
Cracking.
Yeah. Number 3, Flashdance.
Yeah, all right.
We need to do it. We need to do it.
Not yet, though.
Number 2, Octopussy.
Hey, oh, I thought that was 70s. I was confused.
Maybe we got it that much later. Well, no, I can't. Well, no,
this maybe hours.
Bond.
Short.
Yeah.
Bond.
What? And the number 1 we had, Return of the Jedi.
No, that's a new one.
Yeah, still not ringing a bell. So,
somebody
else.
You can ring my bell! Sorry.
What?
Nothing.
So some of the other stuff that happened in 1983. ITV launched Blockbusters.
Can I have a pee, please, Blob?
Blob? Can I get a pee, please, Blob?
Blob. Can I have a pee, please, Blob?
Wow. Yeah,
unbelievable. Yeah, I remember that.
We also had Clive Sinclair is knighted in 1983.
Okay.
So responsible for...
C5.
Yeah, the ZX Spectrum.
Yeah,
Wonderful.
Yeah, okay. Nerd.
I was doing a lot of research on his today.
That's all about him, but
if
the cat fits.
It was a great year for kids' TV.
Mm-hmm.
Inspector Gadget.
Inspector what?
Inspector Gadget. Fraggle Rock. He-Man. All 1983.
Nice.
And finally, in the UK, we had the West End production of Blood Brothers that opened. Yeah.
That
in Broadway.
That was the first version, though, wasn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, not as good as the 88 version.
Right, so yeah, that was the first version that went into the West End, I believe.
Yeah.
Then in Broadway, they had La Cage Folle.
Ah,
that was that was their first.
Yeah. With George.
Noises Off.
Fantastic play.
So I believe that it was West End in 82 and then Broadway 83.
Have you ever seen it?
No.
It's absolutely brilliant. It's one of those sort of revolving set things where it's a play within a play.
Yes.
So you see what's going on stage and then you see what's happening backstage.
That's cool.
Very, very clever. Very funny.
And of course, the other thing that opened in Broadway that year was the classic Satan's Alley.
Yes, that classic.
So there we are. Those are some facts from 1983. Right, well, let's delve into the chart, shall we?
Staying Alive was released in LA for its premiere on the 11th of July 1983 and went on general release in the USA on the 15th of July 1983. And so this week, we are looking at the UK Top 10 for the week commencing the 10th of July 1983. Climbing 9 places to this week's number 10 is Double Dutch from Malcolm McLaren. Last week's 29 is this week's number 9. It's Eurythmics and Who's That Girl? It's another climber at number 8, up from last week's 15. It's Funk Masters and It's Over. Falling 1 place to number 7, it's Tom Robinson and War Baby. And climbing 1 place to this week's 6, it's Heaven 17 and Come Live With Me. Down from 2 to 5, it's Irene Cara and Flashdance, What a Feeling. And it's a nominee at number 4 for Mike Oldfield in Moonlight Shadow. Last week's 5 is this week's 3. It's Freeze and IOU. And climbing 1 place to this week's 2, it's Paul Young and Wherever I Lay My Hat, That's My Home. Which means it's a nominee at number 1 for Rod Stewart and Baby Jane. And that was the UK Top 10 for the week commencing the 10th of July, 1983.
Okay.
Yeah. Join it.
Couple of points. So
trying to say 3 and Freeze and Free. And
No. For me, that's a chart that I'm kind of going. I'm sure if I heard some of them, I'd know it.
Right.
But
do you know Double Dutch?
Probably no, not. I don't think so.
I think you might know if you heard it.
Yeah, that's the thing.
Who's that girl? Eurythmics.
Yes.
Who's that girl running around with you?
I think so.
Flashdance, What a Feeling, obviously. Moonlight Shadow, you know.
Maybe.
Do, 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 do. I am Moonlight Shadow. IOU from Freeze.
Maybe.
A, E, A E I O U U.
That's not ringing a bell, actually.
Oh, okay. Obviously, Paul Young, Wherever I Lay My Hat.
Mm-hmm.
And Baby Jane, Rod Stewart. Baby Jane. La, la, la. Yeah, anyway.
I don't know that.
Okay, okay. I mean, obviously, like I was just saying, they're all in exactly the same key.
It's a bit weird. I'm guessing, well, not that weird, I suppose, because it wasn't released over here, that Frank Stallone's not charting.
Yeah, that is weird, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, just outside the top 10 then, you've got, I guess that's why they call it the blues at 15.
That's a great song.
Monsieur Elton John, Every Breath You Take at 20 from The Police. One of your favourites from a few years ago, from what I remember, to Rewind. Cruel Summer from Bananarama.
I love that song.
That's a cracker. Bad Boys at 24 from Wham, which was one of the first 7-inch singles I ever bought. 79p from Woolworths, from what I remember. Well, yeah. 27, the late, great David Bowie in China Girl.
That's a good song.
Every fucking song's a good song.
But
from Mr.
Bowie. Don't think China Girl gets enough recognition.
No. Oh, the man was a fucking genius, wasn't he? I do miss him a lot. Anyway, 35, Yazoo and Nobody's Diary. Do you know him? That's a crack. Alison Moyer, I fucking adore Alison Moyer.
Yes.
And 40, one of the rumours for Rewind this year, is Shack Attack and Dark is the Night.
Don't think I know it.
Yeah, it's one of those, I mean, Shack Attack, the very sort of almost lift music. Yeah.
Okay.
They're cracking. But anyway, yeah, I mean, it's not the best ever chart we've ever had.
But you know what? For somebody it is. That's the thing, isn't it?
Exactly.
Yeah. For me, early 80s are always going to be a little bit unfamiliar because I was so, so young then.
Yeah, yeah. And to be fair, going back to number 7, Tom Robinson and War Baby, I didn't know, and so again, cocking on about Rewind, but he was at Rewind maybe 6, 7, 8 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And he sang it. And it's a really, really good song. And he was fantastic. A really, really good performer.
That's cool.
But yeah, it's not the best chart we've ever had, but or the most familiar chart we've ever
yeah,
had.
Yeah, I suppose that's a better way of putting it.
Oh, hang on,
it?
Shit. I missed out 28, Wanna Be Starting Something from Michael Jackson.
Oh, that's a great chart.
And she works hard for the money from Donna Summer at 29.
Oh?
So hard for it, honey.
I think my favourite in that chart is Cruel Summer.
It's a cracker, isn't it?
That's just
absolute
such
fucking
a
cracker.
Great song.
Yeah.
That's featured in Karate Kid.
You can tell my eyes are pissed. 36, first picture of you from the Lotus Eaters. The Lotus Eaters. First picture of you, first picture of summer. Oh, forget it.
No, here's the thing. Sometimes I might now start to kind of go, oh, no, I don't know what it is, Dad, just so that you'll sing it.
Thanks, mate. Thanks. Yeah, appreciate that. Anyway, that's the fucking chart.
Brilliant. Well, I suppose now we've had the chart, it's time for Darren's challenge. So every week, Darren has a challenge to get from the last episode to this episode in a certain amount of steps. He starts with 5, goes down to 4, 3, 2, 1. So, Darren, you have 4 steps this week to get from last episode, which was...
Predator.
To this episode, which is...
Staying Alive.
Can it be done?
Let's find out. Okay, as Matt said, I've got 4 steps to get from Predator to Staying Alive. And so we start with Arnie, who was the star of Predator. So, step 1... Arnold Schwarzenegger was in Red Heat with Jim Belushi. Step 2. Jim Belushi was in Destiny Turns on the Radio with Bobcat Goldthwait. Step 3. Bobcat Goldthwait was in Burglar with Anne DeSalvo. And step 4. Anne DeSalvo was in Perfect with John Travolta, who plays Tony in Staying Alive. And that's the 4-step challenge.
That's amazing. So was there plenty of different ways you could have done it?
Oh, many different ways. Yeah.
Yeah. Wonderful.
Yeah. Yes, so moving on. You have no idea. At this point in the podcast, it's time for initial reactions, and being an even numbered episode, I get to go first.
I'm warming up for this. I can't wait. Before you give your can I just say a bit of background?
Yeah,
this film was definitely my suggestion. So before Darren gives his sum up, it's well known that I really like this film. So I'm just genuinely so excited to hear what Darren thinks. So please, the floor is yours, my friend.
Right. Okay. To be fair as well, says I'd seen the film a lot and likes the film a lot. This is completely new to me. And my initial reaction was I didn't hate it.
Okay.
I quite enjoyed it. Yeah. I mean, it's not going to win any awards for being the best film ever or having the best acting ever or the best direction ever or the best soundtrack ever. But Travolta is fucking good.
Mm-hmm.
Character-wise, completely different. We'll talk about that later.
Yep.
But yeah, initial reaction, I quite enjoyed it.
Okay. Yeah.
Yourself?
Well,
I say initial reaction, yeah, but yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, again, background on this, I did drive to Blue Water when it was released on DVD because I was excited to get it. So, yeah, and I must say, I'm quite impressed. I thought your reaction was going to be you wouldn't hate it as much as you thought you were going to. So that's okay. Good. So I think we've got a measure of where we are going to pitch stuff. I really like this. Mm-hmm. I do really like this film. I like the soundtrack a lot. It's not without its faults, and I can clearly see that.
Yeah.
However, it still put a smile on my face. So okay. That's kind of my initial reaction. It's a fun ride, and at 1 hour and 30, well, I say 36, but it says 33 officially. So
okay.
I think it's you could do a lot worse in an hour and a half.
Yeah.
Okay. I know that doesn't sound like a glowing endorsement.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Okay. Well, that's our initial reactions. We're going to take a short break now, and we'll be back shortly.
And we're back. Part two of Darren and Matt's 80s adventure, where we are looking at Staying Alive.
Yes, we are. And at this point in the podcast, our regular listener will know that it's time for Matt's challenge. And he has a challenge to give us the synopsis of the film. He gets as many seconds as the film has minutes. So, Matthew, how long was the film?
According to IMDb, 1 hour and 33, although the version I watched was 1:36. So I'm guessing that maybe was the director's cut.
Well, an extra 3 minutes.
But yes, okay. So let's do 1:33. Yeah.
Okay, so you have 1:33 to give us the synopsis. Are you ready?
I am indeed.
Then let's have the jingle. And if you're still ready, go.
Tony Manero now lives in Manhattan and is determined to make it as a dancer. He works a number of different jobs and has an on-off relationship with Jackie. He goes to see her at the last night of a show and falls for the lead, Laura, a talented dancer with a face like a slap glass. She tells him to stop by the auditions the next day for the new show, which he does, and after that they have a sort of montage day, ending up with Tony having sexy time with her. He gets a part in the new show and life seems to be looking up for Tony. He gets very possessive over Laura, and all the while still stringing Jackie along, he gives him chance after chance. Tony gets invited to parties at Laura's, and in a double dick move, number one, standing up Jackie again, and number two, being possessive at Laura's. This is all too much, so he takes the 3.5-hour walk to his old home in Brooklyn to see his mother. Yes, I did Google that. Upon returning, he wants to try out for the lead, as the douche who has it at the moment isn't right. Jackie helps him get ready to try out, and they reconnect. At a rehearsal, he manages to show his stuff and snags the lead. We get another montage, and this leads us to the show. The show goes relatively well, and he gets one up on the stuck-up bitch. And he drops on her ass. After the show, we get the sense that Tony and Jackie are going to be just fine as Tony leaves the theatre to strut.
Okay, so just remind us, how long was the film?
1:33.
So you had 1:33 to give us the synopsis. You did it in a drum roll. 1:18. I mean, God knows how you managed to drag that out for that long. But there you go. Nice. Well done, my friend.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
So,
Yeah.
So as we go into it, I mean, we do have. There is one alternate casting that I could find, which was apparently Paramount wanted Stallone to play the director of the show, but he didn't. A, want to do it because they couldn't afford his fee, and B, he didn't want to detract from Travolta's performance. So that's pretty much the only alternates that I can find.
Okay. Okay. Nice. So a budget of $22 million.
Hold your horses, my friend.
Oh,
I may have lied to you earlier.
Oh, you did lie to me, you little shitbag. No,
I've got a watch with mother.
I
know. He asked, "Did you watch it with your mother?" I was like,
"Specifically,
no." So yes, I do have a watch with mother. Would you like to hear it?
Yeah, get on.
Right then, we are back. This has been a long time since Watch with Mother. Say hello, mother.
Hello.
And we're about to watch Staying Alive. You know what Staying Alive's about?
Yes, dancing.
Uh-huh, dancing. Excited?
Very, very excited.
All right, well, watch this space.
So there we go. That was pre-drinks.
Mm-hmm.
And then we had this.
Right, so we have just finished Staying Alive, have we not, mother?
We have.
Okay, and so what was your verdict?
My verdict was I thought it was a bit dated to start with, but then when I really got into it, I thoroughly enjoyed it. It was really good. The dancing was marvellous. The music, brilliant. Loved it.
And it was, well, you say dated, but it was nearly 40 years ago.
Oh, well, that's not very long ago, is it?
All right, so if you were going to give it a score out of 10, what would you give it?
Probably 8.5.
8.5, that's very generous. All right, so that is Mum's verdict of Staying Alive. So say hi to Darren.
Hi, Darren.
There we are.
She didn't need to do that. Yeah. I saw her earlier. I just put you up on something. You said nearly 40 years ago.
Well, no, but it was. Yeah, it was 41 years ago.
41 years. God, that's depressing, isn't it? Oh,
yeah.
Okay, so she enjoyed it?
Yes, she very much enjoyed it. However,
yeah,
I get the sense when we got halfway through, I think she was like middling,
right?
But I think it's a film of two halves, isn't it? I think at the beginning it's a lot slower, and I think it actually picks up a lot more in the second half.
Mm.
I think the second half is a lot more, I don't know, user friendly or something. I think that is maybe the more fun half or whatever. But she definitely enjoyed the second half a lot more than the first,
right? Even with Travolta in the shower.
I mean, yeah, he was
fat bastard.
He was in shape, wasn't he?
Well, 5 months of Stallone's diet and exercise regime, apparently.
And yeah, wasn't there a rumor at the time that Travolta was, well, that Stallone wanted Travolta to play Rambo?
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. No, I didn't know that. Okay, fair enough.
So, yeah.
You're lying, little shitbag. You said you didn't watch it with your mum.
I know. I wanted to save it as a little surprise.
Did she, she missed Predator, though, with her?
Yeah, a little bit, yeah.
Never mind. Well, then, let's take our listener deeper up Satan's alley as we go into the film. Yes, so the budget was $22 million, which, to be fair, for 1983 was one heck of a budget.
But I suppose they just come off the back of Saturday Night Fever. Travolta was no small star. Stallone, he had, yeah, a few Rocky films under his belt.
Yeah, I think Stallone went $10 million or something to do it. Travolta went $10 million to do it. Is that right?
Oh, that's quite a lot.
That's a nice big fee, isn't it? But to be fair, I think his star was a little bit waning by '83. He hadn't had much success since. And he had what, Urban Cowboy in '80, something like that, and then not much else.
But I suppose you're still riding high off Grease.
Yeah.
I mean, Grease was, what, 78?
Yeah, well, yeah, Saturday Night Fever, 77, Grease, 78.
So, still pretty big.
Yeah. Budget, $22 million, and it took at the box office worldwide, $127 million. So, you know.
It's a lot of money, isn't it?
But it was fucking panned by the critics, wasn't it? Absolutely panned.
Yes.
Hate it, and still is.
Yeah, it seems to be like a love-hate. I think the people the critics that love it seem to kind of know what it is and love it for what it is.
Yeah.
And I think other people just kind of go, yeah, this is awful. And yes, it's compared to Saturday Night Fever, which is...
It's only natural. It's supposed to be a sequel.
Yeah. Do you know what? That's it. It's supposed to be. Because you could watch this film without ever having seen Saturday Night Fever.
Oh, yeah.
And I think I've seen this film... Many, many,
many,
many more times than I have Saturday Night Fever.
Well, I mean, it's ridiculous that someone would actually, you know, go to Blue Water on the day of the release.
I knew it was coming out. And I think it was like 2002, something like that. Right. It came out on DVD. And I was like, right, I need this. And when we talked about doing this, I was like, yeah, I couldn't find the DVD. However, I was like, I must have bought it at some point on YouTube. And yeah, of course
there
I had.
Was. Of course you had. Well, yeah, okay. So, yeah, like you said, a sequel to Saturday Night Fever, roughly 5 or 6 years later. But to be fair, it has to be said that apart from the fact that Tony Manero's in it and his mum makes an appearance, that's the only elements from the first film. Obviously, he goes back to his home, and that is the same home you see in the first film. Apparently, there's a deleted scene with Annette, one of the the girls from the first film. And if you've seen the first film, what happens with Annette is fucking shocking in the back of the car towards the end. But yeah, that was deleted for some reason, which was a shame. She was supposed to turn up to the first night of the show. Yeah, I don't really know what to say. He's now a dancer. He's auditioning all the time. He's working in a dance studio.
And he'd been training. He's obviously trained as a dancer because that's what he says when he's going around to the... You know, I've trained as a dancer and now...
Doesn't mean it's true. But
No, I suppose not.
But moving on from disco, he's, let's say, working in a dance studio. He's working in a club. And he's sort of being used as a bit of a sex object himself this time around. But he's still a twat. And that's the weird thing about this character. Tony Manero is not nice.
No, he isn't.
He's not nice at all.
And do you know what? Looking at it for this podcast, it made it that much more obvious. Mm. You know, looking at Tony Manero going, yeah, you're... Okay, so you fucked up there. Okay, well, you make it right. Oh, yeah, but you fucked up again. Oh, but you'll make it right. Oh, you fucked up again, Tony. Yeah. Okay. And it is literally a series of him fucking up.
Yeah. Yeah, which is essentially the same as the first film. He is a fuck up in the first film, along with all of his friends. But specifically for this, yeah, he treats Jackie like utter shit.
Oh, doesn't he? And you feel, because she is brilliant, so you feel so bad for her. Because I love her, I like especially in this role.
She's great. I mean, she's great in Dirty Dancing. It's Cynthia Rhodes. She's great in, from what I remember, in Flashdance.
Yeah.
It's a long time since I've seen it. I'm in no rush to watch it again. But he is a complete cunt.
However, I'd say Travolta sells it. That's the thing.
Do you think so?
For me, he does, yeah. Because although his behaviour is terrible, he does kind of flash that smile and you do still root for him. You still feel for him. So right. I think for me, he does still sell it, yeah.
See, I don't. I think because he's such a complete bastard, he's a user, he's selfish, he's immature. He has no right to be jealous at all.
No, he doesn't. He's just finished snobbing somebody else. Then he brings Jackie up to
make sure
go,
she's not in bed with somebody else. And when the guitarist guy, I mean, I don't know who plays him, but he might be related to the director in some way, shape or form, turns up at the dance studio with Jackie. And he gets a hissy fit.
Yeah, he does.
Like, fuck you. And also, he's
like, I thought you weren't going to show up. And you're like, she's doing you the favour,
pal. You didn't fucking show up at least twice in this film already when you said you would, you dick. It's not even like he's an anti-hero. He's just a dick. Yeah, I find the film hard to like because of that. But I think if you look at Jackie...
Yeah.
I think she's a bit of a sap because she puts up with his bullshit.
Here's the thing. What I wish they'd done, and it's just one small change that would have made a world of difference for me, is after he does apologise to Jackie, and although it's not the best speech when saying we should get back together, you know, I'm comfortable with you, and if you're comfortable with me, then maybe we should get together.
Yeah. Oh, great. That's a good reason, yeah.
Yeah. If he had then bucked his act up and... done nothing dickish after that. Yes, I get they needed the impotence for them to have, like, Laura and him to have an argument when they're performing. However, him kissing her in the end of Act One, I was like, oh, Tony, why?
Yeah. And then to just throw her aside on the stage and do his own thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's pushing the realms of believability for a start.
I mean, imagine somebody going on stage and doing their own thing, Darren.
But to completely change the show.
Yep.
I mean, sometimes you have to because, you know, the people you're relying on.
Don't turn up on stage.
Don't turn up for their fucking cue. So you had to sort of improvise around. But he's not improvising. He's decided to fucking throw her aside and do a solo, which is basically just the same thing over and over.
Oh, do not criticize the dancing in this, I tell you. Otherwise, you and I are going to have some serious. Right, okay.
Well, you're in for a shock then. but yeah, my issue mainly is with Tony as a character, as the lead character, supposedly the hero of the film. I don't believe his epiphany when he goes home to his mum, for her to tell him that he's a bastard. Although, having said that, watching it again today, once he says, Jackie, let's do this.
Yeah.
Let's be a couple. He is with her all the time until that fucking kiss. On the first night.
That's what I'm saying. That's what I get. They did need some reason for them to have an argument backstage.
Yeah. Yeah.
The kiss wasn't necessary.
No.
And I suppose maybe you could argue he was caught up in the moment. It felt, you know, like a big passion thing on stage.
Yeah.
But yeah, you could maybe argue that, but.
I think maybe just it would have been better for her to try and kiss him and then for him to fuck off. And then she scratches his face.
Hmm. Yeah.
I don't know. But yeah, I mean, okay, Laura is a character as well.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, it's. I mean, she's very, very good at what she does. The actress...
Finola Hughes. I don't need to look at that. I just know the cast.
There are pictures of... Bizarrely, I mean, Satan's Alley and all that, and whatever the first one's called.
We don't know what the first one was called.
Yeah, exactly. But they just look like cheesy sort of...
I guess the first one's meant to be like a 42nd Street type thing.
There's lots of parallels with things like 42nd Street, Chorus Line,
all
that jazz, especially with the Bob Fosse, Bob Fosse film. But yeah, it just looked a bit what you'd find sort of at the start of... And the Raw Variety performance or something like that, or on a cruise ship or something like that.
Oh, yeah, the first show I thought looked absolutely terrible.
Yeah, yeah, but I mean, what was going on with Satan's Alley? Anyway, that's...
Satan's Alley I loved.
Did you?
Yeah, I want to see the full show.
Do you?
Yep.
Okay.
Sorry.
but yes, Laura, very privileged, arrogant character, not wholly successfully realised by the actress, I think, is the nicest way to put it.
But also, given what she was given as well. I mean, so yeah, no, I agree with you 100% there. However, I looked at their sort of their first kind of meeting after he'd auditioned. And it was very much, it felt like a panto. You know, in panto, the prince and the princess or whatever else, they fall in love very quickly.
Yeah.
That felt very quickly like, oh, well, you've danced. Oh, well, maybe we should hang out. Yeah, well, I'll have to cancel this. I'll cancel this. And it was like, next thing you know, they're having a montage and he's had sex with it.
And
so.
The bump and uglies, yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, she's a spoilt little bitch, basically, isn't he? Isn't she?
Yeah. Yeah, she is. And I think they obviously did stuff to enforce that with the limo and the apartment. Yeah. And
but, I mean, she doesn't really act any differently to how he acts. He gets what he wants, she gets what she wants, and then they throw it aside. Essentially what he's doing with Jackie.
Oh, poor Jackie.
Poor Jackie, we love Jackie.
We do love Jackie.
Yeah, she's great. And she's madly in love with Tony, and but I'd say she's a bit of a sap. She's too gullible for her own bloody good. But yeah, so that's basically the three main characters in the film, isn't it?
I've got a love for the director as well. I really like him.
Right. Old Neil Diamond Loggins.
That's it, he does. I know what you're saying. He does look like a lot of 80s figures.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he's got no sense of fashion.
Well, what are you talking about? Sweaty tights and leg warmers? Mm-hmm. That was the fashion, wasn't it?
And joppers and...
yeah, all right.
Yeah, he's out there. I mean, he's very... It's kind of like they went, right, a director, let's make him flamboyant. And also, on that point, I was watching it again and I was like, hang on, what the fuck is the director doing in the lighting box? calling the show.
That
I was
would
like,
never happen.
That would never happen.
Yeah.
Right, give me a spot. Right, no, sorry, buddy.
Sorry, this is all plotted out already.
Yeah, this is all plotted. You do not get to tell us what to do now.
Sorry, Neil Diamond Leggings. Can you take a step out of here, please?
Can you not sit here while we're... Yeah.
Let's go with the... Let's take the warmers out. Yeah, we've got to wait for clearance, actually. Thank you very much.
I know. As people that are involved with theatre, I was like, well, that wouldn't happen.
That wouldn't happen.
Did you also notice, well, during the show, no one had a programme?
It's also the same audience for both shows.
Well, they've got a season pass.
And they're wearing the same clothes, especially the woman in the white blouse.
Now, genuinely, there was one line in there that rang so true, and I'm sure you felt this too. It's when Jackie says to Tony backstage, how you doing? He says, you know what I need? Another week.
Another week.
And no matter how prepared you are for a show, you always feel
it's squeaky bum time.
I want another week.
Mm-hmm.
I think, and you just wish that you'd worked harder or something like that. Yeah. And it's always going to turn
always
out.
A little moment, a little scene that's not quite secure in your brain.
Yeah, but that really rang true for me when he said that.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, going back to the director, refer person.
The director for
refer, choreographer person. He does like to speechify, doesn't he?
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of, I don't know if that's a sly influence. I mean, there was at one point, I was just expecting him to turn around and say, and here's where you start paying.
Out there, you two are a pair of dancers. You remember that? I remembered that. Okay. It's over the top with dancing instead of arm wrestling.
But it's everything. It's over the top. It's Rocky.
Yes.
It's the underdog winning through at the end.
Do you know what? Maybe that's why I do love it so much. Because, yes, it's not without its flaws, but it is that kind of formula that seems to work.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, £105 million worth of profit work. Yeah.
Can I just look back to the theatre as well? And this is just such a theatrical thing to look at. When he was coming down on the thing, I was like, well, wouldn't get away with that nowadays without a harness. Because you wouldn't, would you? In a stage show
absolutely
now, there'd
not
be some sort of dancer that come on and had to undo his harness when he got out. And it was...
Yeah. Or at least a wrist strap.
Yes.
Yeah.
He was just...
It was the 80s.
Cool, he looked
cool.
It was
impossible.
Did it? I think so.
Yeah, so then, okay, we get into Satan's Alley.
Before we go to Satan's Alley,
yeah.
Can I just ask you something?
Go on.
What do you think of the club that Tony worked at?
The one that we see for about 30 seconds.
When he was the waiter?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. A bit lacking in terms of nightlife.
I just wrote Only Fools. It reminded me of an Only Fools and Horses nightclub.
Yeah. But again, ungrateful. You know, they leave him a tip or the change.
Mm-hmm.
And he shoots them a look like they've just shat on the floor.
Mm-hmm.
He's got a couple of fit birds
wanting to take him home and bed him all night.
Bones.
Yeah.
It's just exercise. Yeah, I don't know. It is a bit Only Fools. Yeah.
And also,
the 111 Club.
Sorry to jump about a little bit.
That's fine.
It was one of my favourite bits, because I know we're going into the finale in the Satan's Alley. Mm-hmm. Is I did enjoy the Any Messages stuff with that guy in the hotel. I really liked that.
The fact he doesn't react at all.
He's brilliant. Yeah. He is absolutely brilliant.
Yeah.
And it kind of felt like something from a Michael J. Fox film.
Yes. Yes,
I agree. You can sort of imagine that.
And actually, Travolta's delivery of the, I love you guys.
Yeah.
And nothing.
I've got to find a new resident.
Yeah. I mean, that's good. I like that.
And but, also, when he walked backstage at the theatre, Any Messages? Oh, it's an inside joke.
But it wasn't at that point. It happened once.
Yeah, I know, but I laughed.
Yeah. But I have to say about the whole... As we said earlier, I have to bring up for the podcast. When he gets the phone call to say he's got the job in the show, what was all the thing about with the music and the, hey, turn the radio off? I didn't quite get that.
Well, it's literally him. He's got the radio.
Yeah.
He thinks the music's playing too loud and it's meant to be a whole joke about, oh, I've got the radio. Oh, you know, I'll turn that down.
How's that a joke?
Well, it's telling people to turn it down when it's actually you that's got it.
That's not a gag.
Well, it is. It's just not a very good one.
Over the phone?
No.
But what's it supposed to mean?
Well,
oh yeah, no, I know he's got the rating. Yeah, yeah, I'm not talking about that, that in terms of what we actually see.
Yeah,
but what's it mean to on the phone? Who's it, what's it supposed to convey to the person on the other end of the phone?
Oh,
I
nothing.
Don't get it.
Nothing. It's meant to be. It was just meant to be a gag about the fact he's got a stereo bearing out.
Okay.
It's just not a very good joke, don't get me wrong, but it's, yeah.
I just didn't get it. It's okay. Like, what the fuck? And then his telephone acting, as we said, was appalling.
Yeah.
You know, at least give them a chance to look like you're listening to what they're saying to mm-hmm. you rather than just, what, I got it? Where do we start? Thank you very much. Bye.
Yeah.
Essentially. Yeah, so I didn't get that at all. But I quite liked, the, like you said, the stuff with the guy behind the reception.
Grumpy. We call him Grumpy.
Yeah. Okay, Satan's Alley then.
Yeah, Satan's Alley.
I just wrote two words. Oh, dear.
Oh, no.
Yeah, I thought it was awful.
Oh, I loved it.
It's the same moves pretty much repeated over and over.
But in slow motion?
Sorry, so... in slow motion with the, you know, a dreamy filter on the mm-hmm. lens. It's almost like they've run out of story half an hour before the end of the film.
Oh, no, no, no. It's probably Stallone approaching it like he would a Rocky film, and this is the final fight, you know, and you get it in three different acts.
Yeah.
So you got the...
It doesn't make it any good.
Oh, well, this is where art is subjective, because I love that section.
Okay. What's the message?
Well, it's. I mean, you didn't listen to the director, did you? It's about a journey into hell and an ascension to heaven, man.
Well, okay. In terms of realistic, what happened? Apparently, it's because Frank Stallone had a copy of Dante's Inferno or something.
Right.
That's the reason why it was written into the script. Apparently, but what is it? Is it a musical? Is it a play with dancing?
Is it a dance piece?
But where's the story? It comes down on a.
Yep.
A piece of metal. They roll around on the floor for a while.
Them, and then he picks her up. To heaven and,
yeah, and then there's some jaws and some whips. It's all a bit camp, isn't it?
Yep.
Yep.
Loved it.
Yeah.
I'm unapologetically in love with this section of the
film. Oh, I know that. I can tell that. Yeah. I mean, to be fair, the costumes and things are very, very good by the legendary Bob Mackie. I just didn't get it. To me, it just smacked of filler.
So you wouldn't go and watch Satan's Alley?
Let me think. No.
It does sound like a porn film, the more I say it.
Yeah, let's go and have a look at Satan's Alley. I don't know. It's a no from me.
Oh, well, I would watch it most nights.
Okay.
Yeah, I get there was a lot of repeating moves, but I just think it looked very pretty and very...
Does it further the story of the film, though?
But it's the culmination of the film. It's a bit like saying at the end of Rocky, does the fight further the film? Well, yeah, I guess so.
Well, that does, because you know it's going one way or the other, or one way, it's mm-hmm. back and forth.
And, well, is the show going to go well in this? You know, is Tony going to make it as a dancer?
Well, yes.
Well, okay, then.
But there's no back and forth, there's no tension, there's no drama, which I think is one of my biggest problems with the whole film. There doesn't seem to be any real... drama with it. There's not enough going on, I think. I think if he'd been thrown out of the show before opening night and what's his face had been brought back in, you know, they'd had a knob off already.
Right.
And I didn't point that out. Tez pointed that out.
And then what? So the show opens and he stands at the back of the theatre and says, nobody does this dance apart from me.
Well, and maybe not that. I mean, that would be foreshadowing something. But I don't know. Maybe if Mr. Bigger Knob fell off the stage or something into the pit. I don't know. Or had a fallout or had a slap with somebody. And then you've got to come back and do it, guy. I don't know. I don't know.
But then why ruin a perfectly perfect film?
I wouldn't know. We're talking about staying alive.
Oh, right. Okay.
Okay. So highs and lows then, whilst we're here.
Well, before we get to those.
You need to pee?
Yeah.
Okay.
Really badly. Right.
Okay. All right, then. So I guess we look at our highs and lows then. And again, being even numbered, I get to go first. So my first high, or my first highlight, has to be Cynthia Rhodes. I think she's the best thing about this film. She's the only character I really care for and I like.
Pervert.
And root for. It's nothing to do with being perverted.
Nothing to do with her tight outfits.
It's the 80s.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
Everything was tight and lip clingingly.
What? You can't say lip clingingly.
Sorry. but yeah, she's gullible. She believes Tony. She's in love with Tony, but she's stupid because of the way he fucking treats her. Bizarrely, she's in a band with Ace Stallone and a Richie Sambora.
Yes, that's it. She's basically Bon Jovi.
Yeah, she is. She's repeatedly stood up by him, but is so fucking stupidly loyal to him.
Mm-hmm.
And she's talented in her own right. At the start of the film, she is the one in a show, and he's fucking so jealous of her. It's stupidly obvious.
I love that scene, though.
It's a nice little scene.
That whole envy thing is brilliant. That's lovely.
Yeah. But yeah, but she's the only one I really root for in the film.
I'm glad. I'm glad, though.
And it's such a good performance. So yeah, my first highlight is Cynthia Rhodes as Jackie.
Excellent. Because she's on my list of highlights as well. Okay. So I'm glad that I don't have to talk about it because you did. So, it's always nice that I've kind of go, well, yeah, one of my first highlights and it's the same as yours. So, but she's there. She is she is one of the best things about this film because she's just adorable.
And it's a really, really good performance and you really feel for her.
Yeah, you do.
Although she fucking still takes him back, the dozy mare.
That's because they can live happily ever after.
Yeah.
So I guess then this goes against everything we talked about earlier, but it is not Tony, but Travolta in this film. I really think Travolta is... I think he's doing what he can with what he's got, but also... actually, the work that he's put into this part, he is a highlight for me because... It's a very incredibly flawed character, but you know what he's done physically and the way he, I don't know, if somebody else had done this, I think you would hate Tony even more because I think Travolta does have that charm that actually takes the edge off and makes him a little bit more likable. So yeah, Travolta is a big highlight in this film for me.
Okay. My second highlight is the scene between Tony and his mum.
Oh, that's nice, yeah.
He makes his way back after basically being rejected. My thoughts is like, how fucking dare you wallow in self-pity after what you fucking done, you moron? You have no right to act like the victim. But then he gets home to his mum, and his mum basically tells him, yeah, you are a twat. But it's because you're a twat, you got out of here, and you managed to make something of your life. And I love her. I think she's fantastic. And it's great to have her back from the first. I don't know what's happened to the rest of the fucking family. It's never even touched.
Well, there was a scene with his father that was deleted, apparently. Right.
Yeah. I don't know where his sister is, because I think his sister in the first one was about 8 years old, so she should be around. But that little scene.
Yeah, and do you know what? I think that was a pivotal scene in this, because, it does more to humanise Tony, who has made a lot of bad decisions up to this point.
Yeah, a lot.
Although he did walk, I mean, I did check on Google Maps how far it is to walk from Manhattan to Brooklyn.
It's 3.5 hours.
It is 3.5 hours. Wow. Yeah.
Well, fucking me.
Because I saw him walking, I was like, well, New York's very big. I want to know how long it takes to walk from Manhattan to Brooklyn. Yeah. So three hours.
But getting across that bridge as well. I mean, which is a nice little reference to the first film,
which our friends walked across the Brooklyn Bridge.
I don't know.
Yep. Yeah. Last week.
At least they didn't jump off, though.
Not like the first film. No.
Yeah. Okay. So that's my second highlight.
Okay. Can I just say, as a little aside to that, I was, as you know, I watched it with mother.
Mm-hmm.
She beamed majorly when the mum sat in the audience going, my son is in this show, just in case you didn't know. And she was like, I've been there many times. It was so nice to see that sort of recognition from my mum, who'd been to so many of my shows and just kind of sat in the audience. But it was the phrase she used, my son is in this show, in case you didn't know.
looking around just for anyone to listen.
And when the mum stood up at the end, it was like, where did he learn to do this? My mum, she loved that stuff. It was
nice.
Brilliant. But nice. Yeah. My second highlight is just the 80s-ness of it. I mean, let's face it. You got very, very 80s music, fashion, even the dancing. Everything is so fucking 80s on 10. And that's what I love about this film, I think. I think that's really one of my favourite bits of this film, is it just feels like, it feels later in the 80s than it actually is, probably.
Do you think so?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
I think it feels more 84, 85 than maybe 83.
Right.
Because you were getting those dance classes springing up, and you had, you know, all these people that were starting to wear spandex and whatever else. And then the music is fucking unashamedly 80s. Even though you've got the Bee Gees stuff that's bled in there from the 70s, the Frank Sloan stuff and the Joe Esposito stuff is very much...
Esposito?
Esposito. Joe the Bean Esposito. So yeah, it's unashamedly 80s, and that is a highlight.
Okay. And I would say a lot of the music for me is a much more of a hangover from the 70s.
Okay.
There's a lot of Christopher Cross. Anyway, we'll get... Yeah. Okay. Right, then my first low light. It's going to have to be sort of tied into one of your highlights, but it's Tony as a character.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's fine to have a flawed character as your lead, but when he's so unlikable, it just, for me, alienates me as a viewer. He's selfish. He's immature. He treats Jackie, the one that you really like, most people, I guess, in the audience are going to identify with in some sort of way. He treats her like absolute shit.
Yep.
And he is a piece of shit. He's a liar. He's a cheat. He's a sex pest. He's self-obsessed. He's aggressive. He's jealous when he has no fucking right to be. He's just not a nice guy.
Can you just do me a favor and not sit on the fence with this? Just say what you think about Tony.
Am I wrong?
He's
a twat. He's an asshole. And I do not buy the epiphany. As much as I like the scene with him and his mum, I don't buy it. And as I said, on second watching, after that scene, he is with Jackie all the time, the hugging and blah, 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 blah.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, once Satan's Alley is over, and we'll probably go on to another show, what's to say he's not, you know, if the leads, I know, some other fit bird, he's not going to want to bone that, in inverted commas, as well. Because that's, he treats it as somewhere to dip his wick, for want of a better phrase. He's a horrible, horrible person.
I think he's going to end up with Jackie.
No.
Yeah.
But you think he's going to fuck anything else that moves when he gets the chance?
No, he's fine. He's fine. He's changed.
You think he's instantly changed like that because his mum told him he was a bastard?
Yep.
Okay. Well, that's where we're going to have to agree to differ. But that's my first low light. I find it hard to like a film. And to be fair, Saturday Night Fever was the same as well. He's a pig in that. He's an asshole in that. But that's much more dramatic and gritty, and you come away from it feeling slightly dirty.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas this, I think it's supposed, because of the rocky ending, you're supposed to root for him. And I just don't. I want to see him fail.
Wow.
But then I think if he does fail, then maybe he'll realise what an absolute shitbag he is. Yeah, so for me, that's my first low light.
Okay.
Yourself?
My first low light is Tony Manero.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So as I say, my first highlight was Travolta, the way he played him.
Oh yeah, I have no problem with reading a lot of the reviews, people seem to say, oh, he's wooden, he's repeating exactly what he always does. It's the same character, guys.
Yeah.
I think you've missed the fucking point here.
That's it.
Yeah, sorry, go on.
I know. So I think there are redeeming qualities. I will disagree with you on that, but I think the character had very little of redeeming qualities, and it made him hard to root for a little bit. And so I do understand that. However, I still did. That's the thing. But he is a low light in the respect of, I think there could have been more of an arc, more of a journey, maybe more of a redemption in the mirrors. Yeah, the redemption at the end or whatever else for Satan's Alley or something. I don't know, something that just... But it will lead me into my second low light. So the reason I'm not saying this. So And just on a side note, very close was Laura, because I found her a bit one-dimensional.
Just a bit. Yeah.
So, okay.
I think that might be down to, without being horrible, I think it might be down to performance as well.
Right. Yeah, no, you're probably not wrong, because I don't know her background.
It doesn't feel nice saying that.
No, it doesn't.
I just don't think she's particularly good.
But also, you know, we don't know her background. I think she might be a dancer that went into acting, and that
well, there's pictures of her in Cats,
right?
Isn't
it? Okay, that makes sense then. Okay,
yeah. But then she went into to soap opera, and I think
no, I know she did Blossom.
Blossom?
Do you remember Blossom back in the day, American
Maybe.
Sitcom?
Maybe.
I think she played Blossom's stepmom or something.
Right.
Like that. Yeah.
I think she was in Days of Our Lives as well. Or okay. So with
well that
with
yeah
Joey Tribbiani.
Okay.
Anyway, yes. Okay, so my second low light is the script. I think it's nowhere near dramatic. Especially compared to Saturday Night Fever. I'm trying not to compare it, but you know, when it's called a sequel, it's almost impossible not to. It's nowhere near as dramatic as that. They've pulled the swearing back completely, pretty much got rid of it.
PG?
Yeah. But Cers came in at the end of Saturday Night Fever when I was watching it.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a bit where, actually it happens three times. The C word, you know, I'd never say cunt, but it's used three times in Saturday Night Fever. I don't think there's even a fuck in this, is there? I think the only swear word is probably bastard.
Yeah.
When him and his mum are over there. So that's been pulled right back, which, you know, it's fine. Let me do that. But I think it's just, it's not particularly dramatic, the script. There's not much jeopardy, and also there's not much actual story, whereas in the first film there's a lot going on. In this, it's just him auditioning for a role. At the start he doesn't get it, and then he goes around to a few agencies, doesn't get it, but then he gets into a show, and then it sort of just becomes rehearsal. The love triangle thing doesn't really go anywhere. It's just sort of all glaring at each other across a rehearsal room.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't really happen. So much fucking speechifying from the director.
Fucking dare.
He does. Yeah. And it all sort of runs out before Satan's Alley starts. It just sort of grinds to a halt. As for a sequel, where are all the others? Where's his dad? I know, like I said, there's a scene cut out, but where's his sister? Where's the friends that he had in that first film? And also, I don't think it's particularly well made in places. Did you see the extra?
Wow.
Did you not see that?
No.
There's a bit, when she's inviting him to her Christmas party, an extra walks across the front of the shot and just goes, I noticed it straight away. I said,
can you explain what that is for the listeners?
Flicks the bird. Is that?
Yeah.
Basically, sticks his middle finger up as he's walking across the shop. I said to Cez, did that guy just fucking stick his finger up? She went, I don't think so. So he rewound it. He does. He walks across the road and goes, sticks his finger up. There's at least two places where it's a two shot or a three shot. And somebody moves, and then somebody has to move to make sure they're still in shot. I laughed my fucking tits off. He's talking to Laura at one point, and then she moves, and he just goes, to carry on talking.
What did you just do?
Literally just move to the left to make sure he's
right,
still
okay.
in shot. So, yeah, I don't know. I think it's a bit lacking in places, and I think it just needed a bit more oomph. Wexler, the original... The screenwriter of Saturday Night Fever had come up with an idea and spoken to Travolta about it, but I think Stallone decided to rewrite it all himself, didn't he, once he was brought on board.
Okay.
So I just think the script is a little bit lacking, and there's a few places, a nip and tuck and a bit more drama, and I think it might have worked better. And actually, like you say, a redeeming arc for Monero would have been much more satisfying.
I mean... It's still pretty perfect, but okay, we'll move on to my second low light, which is I watching it this time and being a bit more critical with it, mm-hmm. you know, was the start seemed a bit jarring, you know. It took a while to get going.
Right.
I know you feel like the end is filler, but that's kind of what certainly me and my mother who were watching it, we were enjoying the end a lot more than we did the beginning stuff, you know, and maybe it's because Tony's less of a bastard towards the end, potentially. But I don't know. The second half felt a lot more slick and polished than the first half. So I think a lot of that for me is it did take a while to kind of get motoring, even though it's straight into, right, this is what he's doing. Mm. And yeah, it just took a while to kind of go somewhere, I think. So maybe that's my second level. It's the beginning. I don't know. It took a little bit of time.
Okay.
Even an hour 33 film.
Yeah.
You know, I wouldn't mind if it took time, but then we had more of a film with it. I don't know. I mean, I guess that's just, yeah, the beginning didn't work as well for me now.
Okay.
Especially looking at Tony's traits, you know, because I did notice it more this time, the more Jackie was being fucked over and over and over. And I was like, are they together at the beginning? Are they just kind of fuck buddies?
Exactly. I mean, the fact he phones her up, like you said earlier, to make sure there's no one in the fucking bed.
Is there a vacancy?
After he's been boning Laura.
Yeah.
And then the film sort of grinds to a halt for a bit whilst they have a couple of songs.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay, so that's our highs and lows. I'm going to have a look at the soundtrack. And it is a lively old soundtrack.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. There's a lot in there.
Esposito.
Most of it from a certain Frank Stallone. Now, doing my research.
I'd say 50-50. I'm say
not
50-50.
Sure if they're related. Well, he's got 8 songs in the soundtrack.
Okay, there's, what, 5 or 6 from the Bee Gees?
Oh, my God. I'm sorry, but you say it's not a hangover from the 70s, but when the lyrics are things like, under me is where you should be.
Yeah.
You can't say that's an 80s lyric. That's a fucking 70s lyric.
Yeah, that's the Bee Gees song, isn't it?
Yes.
Under me is where you should be. I should be loving you too
it's
much.
Awful. Oh, God, it's cringeworthy. But there's...
I love that song. Okay. Under me is where I should be. I should be loving you.
Mm-hmm. Well, okay. Well, there's Frank Stallone with a lot of sort of early 80s soft rock, sort of foreigner type, that sort of thing. The Bee Gees, at that point, were out of fashion and by all accounts were quite worried when they were on tour. They had protection, police protection from... there was a lot of hate for disco at that time.
I mean, there's hate and there's police protection.
It's hard to believe, but that was just the way of the world at that point, apparently.
Yeah, fuck you, disco.
Yeah, I'm going to kill the Bee Gees. I'm not. That's a joke for the podcast. I'm sorry. There's a song called Moody Girl.
Moody Girl.
Yeah. And he's the fucker that's made her moody. Unbelievable. Daryl.
I love how angry you're getting about this.
It's not angry. It's just
you keep putting your glasses on, right?
And then take them off.
So you can't see this. He's putting them on, right? He's reading something, and then he's chucking them down on the table, going, "Oh, and this, by the way."
Animal noises in some of the songs, and I know it was supposed to be for the show. Lion roars. Fucking ridiculous. And most of the songs sound like other songs. There was one point when she's singing a song and she's bawling her eyes out because he's fucked her over again. And it just sounded like a Christopher Cross number or a...
I find another heartache.
Yeah.
It's gonna take some tears. A little bit. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
We're like islands in the stream.
Yeah.
Watching all our dreams.
Yeah.
Yep.
Exactly. but every song in the film sounds like another song.
Mm-hmm.
It's no bad thing. As I say, it's very. I think most of the Frank Stallone stuff is sort of almost on a par with the weaker songs, if you like, from Top Gun.
It does have that feel to it, doesn't it?
Have that, yeah.
Yeah.
But
which again is not a bad thing.
No, not at all. But the fact that the Far From Over. Just sort of.
Oh, I love
a
Far From Over.
Too much.
I'm sorry. I've got to disagree with you on that.
Okay.
I fucking love Far From Over. That is
that's
such
fine.
A brilliant
but it's
song.
Almost up there with what's the song from Working Girl? The only fucking song from Working Girl that's used over.
Let the river run.
Being used over and over and over, and it almost becomes predictable of when you can see it about to kick in.
We're back in the race. Da, da, da,
da, yeah, da, exactly. And yeah, so prosaic. But on the whole, the songs are okay.
Would you buy it on vinyl?
No,
I absolutely will.
Would you?
I think I might actually have it in the loft on vinyl.
Okay.
Or something, maybe.
Go find it. Go find it right now.
I mean, I can't imagine it's going to be that expensive.
No. No. I mean, the score is not a bad score. I find elements of it horrendously dated.
Do you know what? Maybe, Daz, maybe because I've watched it so much in the past that it's become comfort food to me. So I really enjoy the songs because it's a bit like going back and having a burger that may not be that good, but because you've known that burger for so long, it's...
Getting a rat burger at the end of the night in Ritzy.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. Maybe it's something like that, you know. Yeah. But I really, really like this soundtrack.
Under Me is Where You Should Be.
You should be loving you too much, too much. Yeah, I mean, I really like the music in this.
Okay.
So maybe it has become a comfort thing. I don't know.
Okay. Well, there we go. That's our look at the film and the soundtrack.
I think it's been a long time since we've been this, not opposed on a film, but like this far apart, maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't get me wrong. There are elements that I did like. There was a lot I didn't like.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, that's our little look at the film. We're going to take a short break now, and then we'll be back to quiz all over each other.
Because this is far from over.
Under me is where you should be.
I should be loving you too much.
And we're back.
And things are far from over as we go into part three of Darren and Matt's 80s adventure.
I don't get it.
What?
What? Yeah. Right. Well, then I guess at this point in the podcast, it's time for our quiz.
Yes, it is.
Eyes down for a full house. As things stand, this is episode 8 of this final block of 10. We've had 7 quizzes so far, and the scores on the doors, Miss Ford, it's 4-3 to you.
Indeed, yes.
Indeedy do. So I need to up my game over here.
No, well, if you let me win, it's fine. Don't really mind.
Yeah, so it's 4-3 to you. So I get to ask the first question, being an even numbered episode. So question number one then. Okay, we're going nice and easy.
Oh, will we?
Yep.
Okay.
How much has Tony paid for his mum's ticket for the show?
He paid $26.
Uh-huh. Yep, there we go.
Oh, it's always nice to get the first one right, isn't it? Okay, then.
Yeah.
Where does Tony work during the day, then?
Oh, as in the dance?
Yes.
Fatima's Dance Land.
That's great. That's not the question. The question is, what's... No, yeah, that's fine. Also, did you know what they specialise in there, though?
Dancing.
Uh-huh.
There was a few things listed. Yep. I can't remember what they were, though.
Damn it, should have asked that.
Okay. What were they?
Ballet, jazz, tap, and disco.
Of course, it's always going to be jazz, tap, and disco. Well, ballet, jazz, and tap. Okay. Okay, so after one question each, it's... after one question each, it's 1 point each. Question two for you. The club that Tony works in, what are the two names of his colleagues that we hear?
I couldn't hear the first one, to be honest, because I tried to have it as a question for you. Okay. I couldn't hear what he said, and there was no subtitles.
Right.
So I can tell you the second one was Freddie, but I don't know what the first one was because I couldn't hear
Margaret.
It.
Margaret.
But, yeah. Yeah, I do not Margaret feel I should Freddie. Be penalised for that because I couldn't.
That's not my issue.
I couldn't hear it at all. I rewound it 3 times. I couldn't hear it at all.
Yeah, Margaret and Freddie.
Mm-hmm. Well, I like genuinely couldn't hear it.
Well, that's not my problem. Okay. It's there. You can hear it on the version I've got.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. What time does he call Jackie after sexy time with Laura?
I didn't notice this. 3:32.
Yes.
Cool. Okay, question three for you. The Fulton Hotel, where he's living. What time is the lobby closed?
1 a.m. till 7 a.m.
Yeah, there you go.
Because I could see that. What's Jackie's last name?
Ooh. I don't know. Jackie Smith. No idea.
Apart from Jackie being dicked over by Tony, Jackie Cole.
Oh, yeah. Just okay. Okay. So after three questions each, it's 3 points each. So that means it is... Right then. First tiebreak question for you. What is the first rule of the Fulton Hotel?
You don't talk about the Fulton Hotel.
Don't you find
No, I'd have to take a stab at something like no smoking, I guess.
Final answer?
Yeah.
No. First rule, rooms must be paid for in advance.
Okay.
Okay.
Let's go back to Jackie, shall we?
Right.
And when she is auditioning for the amazing show, which we know as Satan's Alley.
Yeah.
What's her audition number?
31. Yeah, that was one of mine as well.
Was it?
Yeah. Okay. Right. Well, that's it. After four questions each, it's 5-3.
Yeah.
To me.
Yeah, kind of.
So that brings it up to...
Couldn't hear the one, though.
Maybe she'd have got a better copy. So that's four each at the end of this quiz. So, yeah, extra questions then. What's the name of the club he walks past when he goes back to see his mum?
2001 Odyssey.
Yeah. What's his first audition number?
40.
How much does he give to Fatima as a down payment on the $1 million?
25 cents.
Well, yeah, a quarter, yeah. What's the address of the Fulton Hotel?
It's something on West Street and 46th, maybe. So 256 West Street.
264 West 46th Street.
Okay.
What's the name of the bar opposite the Fulton Hotel?
Don't know.
McHale's. How many bottles does he drop in the club?
You can't. three.
Two. What's Laura's surname?
Ravel.
Ravel. The whatever agent, what's her address?
Times Square.
Room 24, 824 Times Square Agency. What's the rehearsal room or rehearsal studio's telephone number?
555. Uh-huh. Is it something like 3545?
9545.
Yeah.
Nice. And what floor is their rehearsal studio on?
The second
floor. Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, you see, I did pay attention.
Nice, nice.
It's the stuff I could hear. Okay, so my alternates were...
Yes.
Tony's second audition number.
Oh, was that 42 somewhere? Or 41?
46. But it did have a footage of him in his 40.
Did it?
Yeah, so that's why I was like, oh, that's a bit weird. He's walking through, it's got 40, so they were using, obviously, footage from the other audition. What time does he call his mother to tell her about the job?
Oh, I don't know.
Should have asked that one, fuck it.
Yeah, I don't know, 1:15, no idea.
4:05.
Okay.
So I was like, oh, wow, great. Who does Laura bring home to make that makes Tony jealous?
Oh, I can see him. I can't remember his name, though. Nope, no idea.
Mark.
Okay.
What time do rehearsals for Satan's Alley start?
10 a.m.
In studio?
B2.
Yeah. Yeah, B. Yeah, that's it.
Second floor.
Tony lives in apartment.
I couldn't see it. I did look at the door.
Oh, well, maybe if you had a better copy. 262.
I did try to look because it was going to be one of mine.
I know. But
I
had to slow it down to 25%.
Right.
And just about make it out. Although I couldn't make out the girl's name in the club.
Oh, that's a shame.
Yeah, I know. Crazy, yeah. Right? And let's see. Okay, the studios. Yeah. So what were they called?
Oh, I don't know.
250 West Studios, West Street Studios.
Okay.
And finally, what was the statue he walked past on his Broadway strut?
Oh, his Broadway strut. it's not going to be Rocky, is it, surely?
imagine.
I mean, the fact that Stallone turns up in... Anyway, I don't know.
It was not George Cohen.
Okay. Who is?
I don't know. It just walked past the statue. It said George Cohen. I was like, okay.
Because
so.
I had Walter Scott for the...
In the Central Park. Yeah.
Yeah.
So there we are.
Nice. Okay.
Oh, I did have a... This was a bit of a knobby one.
Right.
Right. Fatima.
Yeah.
What does she have on her top? What fruit does she have on her top?
Cherries?
Yeah.
Was it cherries?
Yeah. Yes.
I was too busy looking at two other things.
It's the melons instead of the cherries.
Hey! Oh, yeah. My bastard question was, what was the name of the girl who had to... What's your line?
Molly.
Molly, yeah, okay. There we go.
Yeah, I would have actually got that.
Nice.
Molly, what's your line? Yeah.
Well, there we go. That's our little quiz.
I wish you'd asked that instead.
Well, I didn't. So, yeah.
But that's the thing, though, because I think I've heard it so many times, I could actually go through the whole film in my head.
Yeah. I'm surprised you didn't get Margaret, then.
Because I couldn't hear it.
How could you not hear it?
Just couldn't hear it, yeah. Okay. And I rewound it three times, because I was like... What's he saying? Is it, I knew it had an M, but I didn't know what it was.
Okay.
But I thought, he's not going to ask that.
And he did. That's last orders at the bar.
Last orders at the bar, please. Last orders at the bar.
So there we go. That's our look at 1983 Staying Alive.
Yeah.
The great John Travolta.
He is great.
Yeah.
And you know, I think he's been through the ringer over the last few years, and I just think he's... He seems like such a genuine chap as well. And from both
Let's
accounts,
not talk about his beliefs.
Well, everyone's entitled to them. Yeah,
exactly.
But he just seems like a genuine chap. And in the last few years, he's just been through the bloody ringer. And you kind of go, oh, bless you, John.
Yeah, I mean, look at his wife. She was an absolute fucking stoner, wasn't
she? Oh, she was brilliant. Yeah, yeah. In fact, we should do that film at some point where they met. It's called The Experts, and I really like that film as well. It's not without its faults.
Mm-hmm.
I think you'll probably enjoy that more than you'll enjoy this.
Okay. So at this point in the podcast, we're going to sum up how we feel about the film and give it a score of 10. Again, being an even-numbered episode, I get to go first. I think my initial reaction, it's sort of still my ultimate reaction to the film. Seth said to me after we finished watching it, what did you think?
Mm-hmm.
And I said, do you know what? I didn't hate it. I was expecting to go into it thinking, oh God, this is a fucking bag of shit. But it wasn't. It's really not a bag of shit. And looking at some of the...
you can see it on the re-release posters, Darren Lake. This is not a bag of shit.
But looking at some of the reviews online on different... Ebert and those... They hated it.
Yeah.
It's got a 0% rating on Rotten Tomatoes and stuff. It's... That I do not get, because there's a lot to recommend this film. The dance sequences, although they're not my cup of tea, and I find them very repetitive and too much, they're very good. It is, at the end of the day, a musical film, so there's stuff there that should be there and is there. I think it's too much. I guess it's probably about 30% of the film, and it doesn't...
That's probably 3 minutes too long as well. It's... 1 hour 33.
But Satan's Alley, I found very repetitive and a bit dull, if I'm honest. But, you know, watching him, he does grow from the first film to this. He's still an asshole. It's still difficult to like a film where you, he's not even an anti-hero. He's just a twat. So in that respect, it's very difficult to like the film. But it's not a bad film. It's pretty well made. There's too much slow-mo. There's too many montages. There's that dreamy filter thing on the lens. But there's a lot to like.
Mm-hmm.
He is a fantastic actor. He looks amazing. And he's obviously worked hard at what he's doing. And as a dance performance, I guess it's... I mean, I know fuck all about dance. I think it's very, very good. I would say a couple of strong females in the lead female roles, but they're still not strong enough. I mean, Jackie especially needs to fucking grow a pair.
Still love her.
But she's fantastic.
She's brilliant.
I don't think the acting's as good as it could be.
Not from her, by the way. She's great.
She's probably the best thing about the film for me. To sum up and give it a score, it's a difficult film to like because he's difficult to like. It's almost impossible to fucking like. But I'm going to give it... Do you know what? I will go back and watch it again, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it's a worthy sequel, but it is a sequel of sorts. I'm going to give it a 6.
Wow.
Yeah.
See, I knew you wouldn't go 4. Because 4 was like mannequin.
But like I said, I didn't hate it.
I was expecting maybe 5.
Right,
so
okay.
6 is impressive.
Yeah.
6 is impressive.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not going to cock on here and give it a 10. I can't do that. I do see its flaws and, you know, watching it with a more analytical head on than I normally watch it because it's one of those films that I can just pop on and watch over and over again because it is a comfort film for me. It's a film I fell in love with maybe, I don't know, 25 years ago. I watched it before it was released on DVD. I think I had it on videotape and that got worn out and I've watched this more times than I probably could care to admit. I can quote it a lot, apart from the lady behind the bar, because it's never quite clear. And it's... but
you need to get a better sound system. That's what I'm saying, guy.
But, you know, I find them lovely. I find the performances great. I mean, yes, okay, Finola Hughes isn't... I find her a bit one-dimensional.
Mm.
Travolta, I think, saves the performance as Tony, because, as you say, Tony's he's a bastard. He's a terrible person, but I mean, he does get a bit of redemption. And I do agree. Rewatching it again today, I was like, oh, how can I put John Travolta as one of my favorite things when Cynthia Rhodes is? Because she is so good.
So good.
But yeah. So I was glad when you mentioned her because I thought, do you know what? I don't have to make that decision now.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I guess, yeah, look, it's a film that's not without its faults. And I did see the change in my mother when we were watching it because the first half she was a bit like, I don't know, yeah, it's fine. And we paused to like maybe get a drink, have a pee, whatever else. Are you enjoying it? Yeah, it's all right. And by the end, she was like, I love this.
Mm. Well, 8.5. 8.5 from Wendy's.
Yeah. And I must say, it won't be an 8.5 from me. This is an important film to me because, again, it's about performance and it's Travolta and it's a lot of fun. Anyway, shut up, Matt.
Yeah, shut up, Matt. It's, just because you got a bum chin as well.
Yeah, I do have a bum chin. But it's
not as deep as that fucker on here.
No, he's got a very big bum chin.
He needs a special light to light that up.
I'm going to go with a solid 7.
Okay. Oh, so we're not that far apart then?
No, we're not that far apart.
Yeah.
I think personally, maybe a bit higher, but I think if I'm being objective about it, I think a solid 7 because... I think there are better films than this. I've probably rated worse than this.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm going to go with 7.
It definitely doesn't deserve a 0.
No. And do you know what? On IMDb, it's under a 5.
Mm.
And I don't think it deserves that either. I don't think it's that bad.
I didn't look.
So, I mean, yeah, I think it's under a 5 on IMDb. And I think that's overly harsh. Mm. And maybe it's people that love the original film and expected something in that ilk. Or, I don't know, maybe just don't like fun. So it's...
or tight tights and big knob.
Tight tights and big knobs. If they'd have called it tight tights and big knobs.
Exactly. Cheesy tights, winky lips and big knobs. I don't know what that means. Anyway, so yeah, okay. So that's, what's that, a 13?
Yep.
Yeah, 13 from us. Have you seen this film, guys? Do you like this film? Do you hate this film? Do you agree with us? Or do you agree with
the majority of the world? Yeah.
Yeah,
I must say, I'm surprised at what you've given this, Daz. I really am. And I'm pleasantly surprised. It's really nice.
It is predictable. It is cheesy. But at the end of the day, that's a lot of 80s films right there in two words.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there we go. Do you like this film? Do you hate this film? Do you think this film should be fucking thrown in the bin and never seen again? Do you think it needs reevaluating? Just get in touch and let us know. Now we're going to find out what we're doing next week.
Yeah, sorry, I went a little bit quiet then because I'm looking at the taglines for next week and it's very difficult to give a tagline without literally giving away the film.
Oh, seven.
Well, okay then. That's easier to do now that you said that. So, so has James Bond finally met his match? That is...
Oh, is that it?
Yeah.
Okay, that could be any fucking Bond
film. That could be any Bond film.
Yeah, we're doing a Bond!
We're doing
a Bond. It's only taken 99 episodes, but we're doing a Bond. Yeah.
I'm quite looking forward to it, actually.
Yeah, me too, Miss Funny Fanny.
Miss Funny Fanny. But we have curated this Bond. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's got to be 80s.
I don't know what that means, but yeah, yeah.
It's got to be 80s. Uh-huh. So we're looking at either Timothy Dodol or Roger Momo.
Momo. Actually, wasn't there from Sean Canary?
I think there was a Canary in there as well. Yeah. Roger Momo, Sean Canary, or Timothy Dodo.
Yeah. But we got a bit of Darren next week as well.
Oh, nice. I like what you did there. Took me a second.
It did. Yeah, I noticed that.
So there we are.
Yeah.
That is our little look at Staying Alive.
Yeah.
I'm glad we did this, by the way.
Yeah.
And do you know what? From your reaction to when we decided to do this to you watching it.
Yeah, I did say to you, I think, because we decided on New Year's Eve, didn't we?
Yeah, we did.
We were pissed. And I think I messaged saying, how the fuck I let you talk me into that? I have no idea.
And pleasantly surprised to a degree?
Surprised, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. That's, nowhere near as bad as I thought it was going
to
be.
Well, listen, as always, please feel free to get in touch and we will be joining you next time where we are, we're doing a Bond.
We are.
Yeah, we're drunk, so we're going to carry on drinking some more. So then, Daz, anything else?
Nope.
That's good, because we've danced so close to the fire tonight. things are far from over. I know, they are over. So until next time then,
I've been Matt. Still going. And I am Darren. Cheersy!
Because we're like islands in the street. All right, okay. Let's,
I love you just the way you are.
Do, 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 do. Do, 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 do.